How old is too old to take up surfing? How about skiing? Until recently, it was thought that older athletes should probably stick with golf, maybe pickleball. But new research suggests that people of just about any age can enjoy and sometimes even excel at a wide variety of physical activities, including some extreme sports. In NAR Country, Growing Old, Staying Rad, author Stephen Kotler explores this new frontier, even as he puts his own aging body on the line by trying to become an expert skier in his 50s. Stephen is a New York Times bestselling author and award-winning journalist and the executive director of the Flow Research Collective, where he studies human performance. Here he is to share five of his big ideas.
Hello, I'm Stephen Kotler. I'm the author of NAR Country, Growing Old, Staying Rad, and I'm the executive director of the Flow Research Collective, where we study the neurobiology of peak human performance, or what's going on in the body and the brain when humans are performing at their very best. Here, I want to talk about a subset of this work, peak performance aging, which is also the focus of NAR Country. It's helpful to know a few definitions before we go deeper. So what do I mean by terms like peak performance and peak performance aging? The idea is really simple. Peak performance is nothing more or less than in getting our biology to work for us rather than against us. Peak performance aging takes the same principle and applies to the challenges and opportunities that arise in the second half of our lives. And this is good news. A growing pile of research shows that we can sustain and even advance peak performance far later in life than most people believe possible. So how do we do that? Let's talk about five really crucial ideas. One, the place to start is with the traditional idea about aging, or what I like to call the long, slow rot theory. This is the idea, probably familiar to all of us, that all of our mental skills and all of our physical skills decline over time, and there's really nothing we can do to stop the slide. Now, this idea actually dates back to Sigmund Freud, something Freud said in 1907. So a few months before Freud's 50th birthday, he was really, really freaked out about turning 50. And he wrote, about the age of 50, the elasticity of the mental process upon which treatment depends is, as a rule, lacking. Old people are no longer educable. Freud believed that anybody over 50 was so far beyond their sell-by date that even therapy, psychotherapy, was impossible. Don't even try it. Freud's statement is the origin of the long, slow rot theory and the birth of the notion that you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Yet, as you may have guessed, nothing could be farther from the truth. You want proof? Well, for starters, Freud himself went on to write a great many of his most famous and important books in his 50s and his 60s. And it turns out Freud was wrong and the long, slow rot theory was wrong, though we didn't really start to figure this out until fairly recently. And it's not that all of our mental and physical skills decline irreversibly over time. Sure, these skills do actually begin to decline, and not just in our 50s, in many cases, as early as our 30s. That's only a starting point. The truth of the matter is that all of these skills are actually use it or lose it skills. And if we never stop using these skills, we can hang on to them, even advance them far later in life than anybody thought possible. Better still, since the brain figures out how to compensate for some of what is lost, we can perform as though we've retained an even greater percentage of those skills. But there's no choice in the matter. We need to train for our later years with the conviction of a professional athlete. Why? Once you reach 50, if you're not moving forward, you're sliding backwards. Two, mindset matters. In fact, if you're interested in retaining all those use it or lose it skills we just talked about into your later years, and you're interested in peak performance aging, then you have to understand, as Harvard psychologist and one of my great heroes, Ellen Langer, once said, aging is as much a mental event as a physical process. One of the wildest examples of this is the Ohio Longitudinal Study on Aging and Retirement. The study ran for 20 years between 1975 and 1995. It had about 500 study subjects. And among many other things, it examined the relationship between mindset, health, and longevity. In this study, we learned that a positive mindset towards aging, meaning excited about the possibilities in the second half of my life, and I believe that my best days are ahead of me, translates into an extra 7.5 years of health and longevity. And these findings have been repeated again and again and again. This means changing your mindset towards aging has as much impact on longevity as quitting smoking, and maybe more impact than losing weight, even if you're obese. This is critical for so many reasons, but one of the most crucial is that ageism, which is a negative stereotype towards aging, is the most common and socially acceptable prejudice in the world. But it's a prejudice. It's a blind bias based on fear and misinformation, and it's contagious. When you treat people in their later years as if they're old and slow and decrepit, this can get internalized by the victim, and it has a direct negative impact on their mental and physical well-being. We are dying young as societies because we're mistreating our older adults. 3, positive mindset towards aging that we just spoke about, that our later years are filled with amazing possibility, isn't a platitude. Research shows that our later years are actually a new stage of adult development where 3 profound and positive changes take place in the brain. For starters, certain genes, they get activated only by experience, which basically means the brain remodels itself over time, adding depth and wisdom to our personalities, especially as we enter our later years. 2, the brain learns to recruit regions that were underutilized in our earlier years. And this is where that compensation comes from. The brain starts to colonize underutilized areas, build in redundancy, and a lot of this can compensate for the cognitive decline that comes with age. 3, the brain's information processing capabilities get jacked up. They reach their greatest density and height between the ages of 60 and 80. And what this does is it allows the two hemispheres of the brain to work together like never before. Now, these neurobiological changes unlock 3 types of thinking that are mostly inaccessible to all of us before we enter our 50s. More importantly, all 3 types of thinking that we're going to be talking about, they continue to improve with age, as long as we continue to cultivate creativity, which is actually what's required to train up these thinking styles. So the first thing that happens, relativistic thinking starts to come online. This means we learn to better synthesize disparate views. We learn that there are very few absolute truths, mostly relative truths, and that black and white thinking is a folly in youth. Non-dualistic thinking starts to come online. We learn to consider opposing views without judgment. We learn to see both sides of the same coin, and we learn empathy and wisdom. And finally, systematic thinking. We can see the big picture like never before, and we can see the forest through the trees, and we learn how to think divergently. Now, this work changes the conversation around peak performance aging. It is no longer a question of what can we do in spite of our age. Now it's actually about what we can do because of our age. Or as geriatric psychologist Gene Cohn explains in his classic book on the subject, The Mature Mind, dozens of new neurological findings are overturning the notion that you can't teach an old dog new tricks. It turns out that not only can old dogs learn well, they are actually better at many types of intellectual tasks than young dogs. 4, because of these shifts in brain function, and the development of these new thinking styles, as we enter our 50s, we gain access to a legitimate suite of cognitive superpowers. In really simple terms, our ego gets quiet and our perspective starts to widen. We gain access to whole new levels of intelligence we just talked about, creativity, including, as I mentioned, divergent thinking. This is outside the box thinking. This is the hardest aspect of creativity to train. New levels of empathy and new levels of wisdom. And wisdom is a definable neurobiological trait. And as a result of this, key downstream skills, critical thinking, problem solving, creativity, communication, collaboration, cooperation, all have the potential, properly cultivated, to skyrocket in our later years. Yet, access to these superpowers, it's not automatic. To produce the necessary brain shifts, we got to pass through a series of gateways, or what psychologists like to call moderators. These are if-then conditions. So if we want these superpowers of aging, we have to pass through these gateways, these thresholds. By age 30, we come upon the first one. By age 30, we have to figure out who we are in the world. We have to solve the crisis of identity. Eric Erickson pointed out, this sort of shows up around age 12. He thought it might get resolved by 18. Turns out it actually gets resolved by 30, and it has to, because by 40, we need to develop what economists call match quality or match fit, which is a tight match between who we are, our strengths, our values, and what we do in the world. So if you haven't solved the crisis of identity, can't figure out who you are, so there's no way to match that to what we're doing in the world, so you can't solve this next challenge. And by our 50s, this is where forgiveness of ourselves and others, of folks who have done us wrong, of parts in our past where we feel embarrassment or shame, we have to clear our emotional slate. And we have to do this because if we don't, we can't sort of unlock this multi-perspectival thinking, the empathy, the wisdom that really comes on with age. Now, the point I want to make about all of this is actually a business revolution waiting to happen. The mental skills that come online over 50, research shows, are the most crucial skills for thriving in the 21st century. In fact, in talking to thousands of CEOs over the years about peak performance and the qualities they desire most in their employees, I've heard the same thing again and again. I've heard that CEOs need intelligence and creativity to drive innovation and help their organizations keep pace with the accelerating rate of change in the world. They also need empathy and wisdom because company success depends on team performance, and that requires collaboration, cooperation, and psychological safety, which are totally impossible without empathy and wisdom. Additionally, customer-centric thinking is a mantra for 21st century business, but if you don't have empathetic and wise employees, nobody's got the ability to think like their customers. In short, the over 50 crowd might just be the dream workforce of the 21st century. 5, if you really want to stave off cognitive decline, dementia, and Alzheimer's, the key is lifelong learning. Why? Because lifelong learning produces both expertise and wisdom. What's the difference? This isn't really a good definition, but it's practical. Think of expertise as all the stuff that you learn consciously, and wisdom as all the stuff that you learn non-consciously. Not a great definition of either expertise or wisdom, but it's sort of a practical way to differentiate them and serves our purposes. But the point is that expertise and wisdom are these complicated neurobiological traits, and they create really broad, expansive neural networks. And they do this across the prefrontal cortex, the part of your brain that's right behind your forehead. Now, the prefrontal cortex is the newest part of the brain from an evolutionary perspective and the most vulnerable to cognitive decline. But these expansive networks that underpin expertise and wisdom, they create lots of redundancies. It's a backup plan after a backup plan after a backup plan. And this provides the greatest protections against the ravages of time. So what is the fastest way to get expertise and wisdom in our later years? Complicated sentence. All these terms mean a specific thing. I'll break them down in a second. But if I were to put peak performance aging in a sentence, it's if we want to rock till we drop, we want to bring on expertise and wisdom in our later years, we want to engage in challenging, creative, and social activities that demand dynamic, deliberate play and take place in novel outdoor environments. So let's break down that a little bit. Challenging social and creative activities, these drive us into the state of flow. This is the technical term for the optimal state of consciousness where we feel our best and we perform our best. And the state of flow is crucial for peak performance aging for a dozen different reasons, but maybe the most important is that the state amplifies learning and it produces feelings of mastery and control. So learning, wisdom, and expertise, neuroprotective against cognitive decline, feelings of mastery and control, these are two of the most positive feelings that humans can experience. And when we experience really positive emotions, this has a powerful impact on health and longevity. Positive emotions produce T cells, which fight disease, and natural killer cells, which target tumors and other sick cells. So challenging social and creative activities amplify flow, they amplify learning, they amplify feelings of mastery and control. Dynamic, deliberate play is also very specific. Dynamic means it trains all 5 categories of functional fitness. I said earlier, all our skills are lose it or lose it skills. So on the physical side, there's 5 categories that matter: strength, stamina, balance, agility, and flexibility. These are all the use it or lose it physical skills that we need to be regularly training as we age. Dynamic means it's hitting all these areas. skiing is a dynamic activity. Badminton is a dynamic activity. Tennis, soccer, these are all examples. Deliberate play is defined as repetition without repetition, or repetition without improvisation. It's a slightly different approach to expertise and learning than psychologist Anders Ericsson's idea of deliberate practice, which is repetition with incremental advancement. Deliberate practice is great for training certain types of expertise, but as a rule, deliberate play, because we learn better when we're playing, and we set down shame and self-consciousness and embarrassment, and are just truly playing, that amplifies learning. So dynamic, deliberate play is a kind of full-bodied, playful learning. Finally, the end of the sentence, the reason these dynamic, deliberate play activities need to take place in novel outdoor environments, I said at the start that peak performance aging is getting our biology to work for us rather than against us. The reason we want to play in novel outdoor environments is neurogenesis, or the birth of new neurons. If you want to stave off cognitive decline, we need to create new neurons, and we need those new neurons to form robust networks, linking new memories to old memories and protecting the whole lot against cognitive decline. In older adults, the hippocampus is where most neurogenesis takes place. The hippocampus is also the part of the brain responsible for map making and long-term memory. It's packed with place cells and grid cells and other neurons that specialize in recording locations. It's from an evolutionary perspective, remembering where we were when important stuff happened was just critical to survival. The easy way is way to get the hippocampus to birth new neurons, to get our biology to work for us rather than against us, is to have emotionally charged experiences in novel environments. Dynamic, deliberate play produces emotionally charged experiences. Novel environments takes advantage of our basic underlying neuronal hardware. The point is that lived well, the second half of our life can be the most thrilling and successful period of all. If you want to learn more, check out In Our Country, Growing Old, Staying Rad. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy the book.
Thank you, Stephen. That was Stephen Kotler with 5 Big Ideas from In Our Country, Growing Old, Staying Rad. Also, check out the 5 Big Ideas from Stephen's other book, The Art of Impossible, a peak performance primer. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a gnarly day.